Right. Hi, folks. Welcome to today's CCG meeting. Today, I'm delighted to have Stephen Curran, who's going to talk to us about Hyperledger and OnCreds, which, I mean, it's a project I got a lot of respect for. I used to dabble around in the Hyperledger ecosystem for a while, and I love what they're doing, bringing this cryptography that's been around for a long time to the real world. So I'm super excited about that. Hope you guys are too. Before we get into that, I'll just run through the admin. So, you know, code of ethics, professional conduct reminder, treat people with respect, be nice, listen. I think we all do a good job of that here, but it never hurts to have a reminder. Next up, IP note. So anyone is welcome to participate in this call. However, if you are a substantive contributor to any of our CCG work items, you must be a member of the CCG with full IPR agreements signed. If you need any help with that or have any questions, you know, just reach out to the chairs. We'd be happy to point you in the right direction. So call notes, you know, we run these calls on Jitsi, but all the audios are recorded and available on the W3C calendar after the meetings. We do use IRC, but not really. If you're in IRC, you can press Q+ to queue yourself. Or if you're in Jitsi, I think just raise your hand and we'll manage the queue like that. We don't need to scribe. Oh, introductions and reintroductions. Would anyone like to say hello to our community? If you're new here, please say hi. If not, and you want to say hi anyway, you're welcome to say hello. Okay. No one's feeling friendly. Gone. Very good. Announcements and reminders. Does anyone have any announcements and reminders that they feel like the community would like to hear about? Please jump on the queue and share them with us. Erica. Hey.
Hey, Will, and everybody. Just a friendly reminder that Rebooting the Web of Trust will be convening in October the 7th through 11th in Ventura, California. People have started submitting papers, and that is a great way to get count on your tickets. Early bird ticket deadlines are coming up at the beginning of August. I don't have the calendar in front of me, so I don't remember what exactly they are. I think the 9th is the ticket deadline. It might be the week before for papers on the 2nd. I'll put a link in the chat for details, a link to the event, right? All the details are there. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Erica. Yeah, that's a great reminder. I will be at TPAC. It's going to be a good, not at TPAC, at Rebooting the Web of Trust. But that reminds me, TPAC is also coming up. If you guys are interested, I think it's going to be a great event, also in Southern California. So, you know, if you're interested in a holiday as well, you can come to TPAC, you can have a week in California, and then you can come to Rebooting the Web of Trust. It might be a bit heavy, but it should be a good time. Okay, any other reminders and announcements to the community before we dive in? No, not seeing any. Okay, like we should be discussing the work items. I am not going to be calling on anyone this week, but if anyone has any updates, if anyone's been doing any work that is associated with CCG work items, anything at all, we would love to hear from you. And if you haven't been doing work, but you have work that you know needs doing because there are open issues or pull requests or anything like that, please let us know because we'd love to hear about it. I hear a hand. Who is that? I didn't see. Sorry. Please speak.
It's me,
Patrick. Hey, Patrick.
I will. A long time ago, Pat.
Yeah.
So just, since you invited people to share any kind of work, one thing that I've been working for quite a significant amount of time, and it's, getting closer to fruition, is to maintain the Hyperledger Aries Cloud Agent Python along with Verifiable Credential 2.0, and I'm currently looking at data integrity, crypto suites and test suites, and we can now have the agent directly interacting with the test suites, which is great to demonstrate interoperability and show support to the specification. So just wanted to share this.
Great. Sounds like you've been talking to Benjamin.
Yes.
Cool. Anything else? All right. I think that's everything. So over to you, Stephen.
All right. I am going to talk today about, whoops, that's not good. I got to share a screen. Hang on 1 second. Just go screen. All right. People can see my screen.
Yes, we can see it.
Okay, good. All right. So, this is a presentation, originally scheduled for way back in May. It seems years ago. But kept moving around. So finally here on and ready to talk about Hyperledger non-threads in VCDM format. Can't we all just get along? What just happened? Uh-oh. Maybe I shouldn't have shared my screen. I'm not quite sure why that just happened, but let's go there. There we go. Agenda about Hyperledger non-creds, and then the project we've implemented recently on putting it into W3C BCDM format. So give some background on that. And then the main part of what I wanted to mention was the learnings from that, from taking a credential format and converting it to BCDM and what we learned. And then some follow-up, just some brief wrap-ups on how the work got done and what's next. So for those not aware, I think many of you are aware of what Hyperledger non-creds is. Zero-knowledge proof-based verifiable credentials specification and implementation. So Hyperledger non-creds spun out of the Indie project. So CL Signatures was created around 2000 to 2004, and non-creds V1 is based on CL Signatures. It is the second generation of CL Signatures implementations and production implementations. So IBM Zdemix was there. Hyperledger the implementation of non-creds was part of Hyperledger Indy in 2016, and that's where all of this work, V1 of non-creds, was established and is essentially unchanged since then. And then it became a separate project at Hyperledger in 2022. And the idea of separating it out was to disentangle it from Indy, make it VDR agnostic, define a specification since no specification had been previously written. And that specification locks in what V1 of non-creds is. It's also, the project is a place to work on V2 of non-creds. And that's based on newer being a couple of years after CL Signatures came out. So still in the early 2000s, cryptography, notably BBS signatures and later the PS signatures. So I'll talk a bit about V2 at the end, but just briefly touching on that. So a non-creds V1 is not a signature scheme per se. It's an opinionated way to use CL signatures. And that opinionated way is to enable interoperability. And that's where it's been pretty successful, in that there are many implementations, around that use a non-creds, and that allow, a pile of wallets that use it, a pile of issuers and verifiers that use it, and pretty good interoperability across them. The specification itself covers the data objects from the issuer, needed by the holder and the verifier. So I'll talk about that in the next, but there's a bunch of objects there. There's the actual verifiable credential format and the presentation format. So the data models and objects. And really that's what we're talking about in aligning that with the VCDM. And then also is the interactions and data models between the issuer and the holder and the holder and the verifier. So when a issuer issues a credential to a holder, they have to do a sequence of an offer, a request and an issue. And there's data models between each of those, and then a request, present, and verify. So it doesn't talk about the protocols, how those things flow back and forth, but rather here's what the data is what the issuer is expected to produce and what the holder is going to consume in an offer. And from the request, from the issuer or from the holder to the issuer, the request, and finally the actual issue of the credential. This is sort of what happens. You've got a setup process where the issuer writes a bunch of data to the verifiable data registry, whatever that might be. Doesn't have to be a ledger, doesn't have to be a blockchain, can be DID web. We'll soon have it with DID TDW. And those are a schema which the issuer may either write themselves or use from somebody else. So think of this kind of as the context. The analogy would be the JSON LD context, the schema, and it's very little information, just a list of attributes in the credential. The cred def, which uses the schema but contains the public keys that need to be used to verify the credential, and then optionally a revocation registry. All of these, the holder creates the link secret. This is the holder binding mechanism. On issuance, there's an interaction between the issuer and the holder, and the issuer creates, signs, and sends the credential to the holder. On presentation, the verifier requests a presentation from the holder, and there's a format exactly for how they request that and what flexibility they've got in what they're requesting. The holder constructs the presentation with revocation if necessary, and then passes that obviously to the verifier that verifies it. Reading from the BDR. So the verifier needs to get the credential definition that I talked about that has the keys that they're going to use to verify, and as well the revocation information necessary. The holder, if they're going to use revocation, need to, at the time of presentation, get the latest information about revocation. And finally, for revocation is a unilateral action taken by the issuer. So they would decide, hey, I want to revoke a bunch of credentials, and they would publish the revocation registry state to the VDR. And that state is what the holder picks up to prove their credential has not been revoked. The things like the presentation request is very flexible, so that a verifier can request attributes from 5 different credentials if they want. And the holder retrieves all the necessary data, or has all the necessary data, constructs a proof, and passes that on to the verifier. And so it can cross multiple credentials. Part of that verification is that all of those were issued to the same link secret, meaning they're bound to the same holder, regardless of who the issuer was. All of these are done with zero knowledge proof. So there's selective disclosure, the minimum necessary for data privacy, which is a holder can present only select fields if they choose, or if the verifier asks, and present a valid proof, but only sharing some information. There are what are called predicate proofs, which are the age type things, or anything based on a number. So greater than, less than, greater than or equal to, and less than or equal to proofs based on numbers in the source credential and verified that expression verified in a, or presented and verified. Am I older than 21 without, based on date of birth, without exposing the date of birth? All of the presentations, including for revocation, have unlinkable identifiers. So if I present a verifiable credential at one place and then go to another place and do another verifiable presentation, there's no identifiers related to the presentation itself, that link, that can be used by either the verifiers amongst themselves or the verifier in conjunction with the issuers to determine who the person is. If the presentation provides a correlatable identifier in the presentation, they share an identifier, then that obviously would be correlatable. But just the act of presenting a proof does not expose any linkable identifiers, even if revocation is involved. And finally, as I mentioned before, multi-credential presentations. Any presentation can include data derived from multiple verifiable credentials. So that's the story of anoncreds. Anoncreds friction with the W3BC. So, you know, as mentioned, we went for many years working on anoncreds and doing implementations. And there was always this, hey, wait a sec. These aren't the same as W3C VCs. So I've got the lowercase VC here because we're using verifiable credentials, and the uppercase W3C proper verifiable credential. So conceptually the same. Obviously different underlying cryptography, but that's not unusual. There's multiple crypto suites that use the VCDM, and that's a good thing. That allows crypto agility and moving forward. So that's not the issue. But it used a different data model and a format, and that's what's no good. Anoncreds just implemented, made a bunch of decisions back in 2016 or prior to that, and implemented those models, and those were just used. And there was attempts made, several attempts made to align anoncreds with the W3C VC, but they actually sort of took steps backwards rather than forward. They made things much more complicated. And so that's what this is about. And I'll get to where we got to with this. The other issues were with it, the friction between anoncreds and W3BCs was the complexity of ZK keys and what that would mean, and the specification but not standardization of the cryptography. And then those are completely valid issues. Anoncreds probably, you know, won't, in certainly V1 will never be standardized. It has been specified. It's clear how to use it and what all the data structures are, but it will not go to a standardization body. It's very unlikely it would. Our goals, BC goals, I shouldn't say our, I should say, British Columbia's goals. I work for the digital trust team at BC, but I'm not a government employee, not a public servant. So I shouldn't say we, but BC's goals, maximum privacy preserving verifiable credentials. We're completely aligned with getting to unlinkability on our team. Minimum data sharing for any purposes. All of the techniques that Greg Bernstein went so well about BBS signatures, all of those techniques and capabilities are exactly what we want to see implemented and move forward. We want alignment with the W3C verifiable credential standard. We want the VCDM to be the core of this. Everything BC does is open by default, so open source development. So we want to make sure that everything we produce and use and in this area is open source. And we also want to open a pathway to the next wave of privacy preserving credentials. We know, you know, anoncreds is not the end of the line, but rather the beginning. And we're trying to continue to build things that are very flexible for us to be able to, move to whatever comes next. And it's looking like possibly BBS signatures, the VCDI, BBS crypto suite or whatever it will be. And Anoncred's V2 with BBS is certainly a thing we're interested in. So, with that introduction, I'll jump to Anoncred's in the W3CVC format and back. So as I mentioned, there was a few attempts made. There was a thing people might have heard of called rich schemas that had been hanging out in the Anoncred's world. And that was an attempt to sort of add JSON LD features or capabilities to Anoncreds, and it didn't catch on. And the big reason was it made it things actually more complex, added more objects, added more things to manage, and just made things harder. What we looked at doing and realized was possible, excuse me, it actually was at rebooting Web of Trust that this sort of idea assembled in Den Haag, The Hague a few years ago, was that we could actually implement the data model simply by moving JSON around and putting things in the same data we already have in Anoncreds into the right place in a VC and a VP. And we wind up with alignment, adhering to the VC data model. And so that's really all that's been done. The canonicalization, the signing, the creating of the presentation, the verifying the presentation, all of those items are identical between Anoncreds in its native format, if you will, and Anoncreds in the VCDM. All of the Anoncreds are fully supported. As I'll show a little bit later, it works for all Anoncreds VCs, again, lowercase, but does not work the other way around. And that is because it can't support, Anoncreds cannot support arrays. So because of the underlying CL signatures, there's no way to dynamically have arrays supported in a credential. So there's no way that an arbitrary, notably one, a verifiable credential with arrays in it can work with Anoncreds, but anything else pretty much can. The other thing that we're very interested in is supporting parallel signatures, and something Manu's talked about before and brought to our attention and is really crucial. And this is really why we chased down this work. Being able to issue a single credential with Anoncreds and a NIST approved signature on the same verifiable credential. And so I sort of call that a privacy and less privacy preserving signatures. Privacy with the Anoncred CL signature, NIST approved, less privacy preserving, and allow the holder and the verifier in their interaction and their requirements to decide which is the right signature to use in what scenario. So for example, at a at a government verification event, the holder might share the NIST approved signature on the verifiable presentation. So use that one, but on a privacy preserving, on a non-government where NIST is not a requirement, be able to take advantage of the privacy and unlinkability enabled with Anoncred. So that's kind of the goal we're going for. Doesn't use JSON LD canonicalization. I borrowed this from Manu and Greg's presentation of this data, transform the data, hash the data, generate the proof. Doesn't use that approach because we just use the same thing that Anoncreds used. For the technical folks involved, I'm just going to quickly go through that we take the issuer out of the creddef issuer, cred def identifier in Anoncreds, and we put it. So this is the on this side is the Anoncreds data structure. On this is a VCDM data structure. So the issuer is extracted from the cred def and put in the right place. The credential scheme is put in. I believe this actually got cleaned up before we finished. So this might be an old one. I realize as I'm sitting looking at this. I don't think we used this because it didn't, it required, an Anoncreds context, which we didn't use. Here, the, data values that were passed in the AnonCreds, they go into the credential subject where you would expect them in a verifiable credential. Encoding is how the canonicalization is done. In AnonCreds, in its native format, that is done by the issuer, but it is done with a very specific algorithm. We turned that algorithm, in doing this work, we just made the algorithm built into the W3C implementation, VCDM implementation. All of the data for the signature goes into the crypto suite for the data integrity proof. Here there is an AnonCreds context that's actually been removed. There is no AnonCreds context necessary, and I'll talk about that in the lessons learned. What we get out of that is an AnonCreds. This is actually an actual AnonCreds credential in VCDM format. So we have the proof here is a data integrity proof. It uses a crypto suite called AnonCreds 2023. There's a verification method and then a proof value, which is where everything resides. The credential subject, issuance date, I'll talk about that a little bit because that was interesting. Notice no special context. There is a vocab, and I'll talk about that because that has issues with V1. It's necessary in V1 and also in V2, the VCDM V2. All those things I talked about. Guess I should have been clicking. Okay. Over to the interesting details. So AnonCreds first. We can put any AnonCreds credential schema into JSON-LD and the VCDM, but we can't go the other way around. That is because it must be a flat list of claims, no arrays. We didn't do anything about flattening out a structured credential. So this is only for taking an existing AnonCreds credential and converting it into a VCDM. As opposed to taking some arbitrary, rich schema, JSON-LD schema, and signing it with an AnonCreds signature. AnonCreds JSON-LD does not use RDF canonicalization, so it does not use the techniques that Greg, talked about in his last two, sessions on the CCG. So claims are, each individual claim is encoded as an integer. Anything that, and then those encoded integers are signed. And that is how AnonCreds has always worked, how CL signatures work. So this is essentially the canonicalization. You simply take an integer and you convert it to you take a claim, an attribute, you encode it as an integer, either a hash. If it's not an integer, you convert it to an integer, by stringifying it and hashing it. Otherwise, the integers just stay as is, and then you encode those. And the encoded integers are what get signed.
Can I just jump in there, Stephen? I just want to highlight that, you know, this is done like this because this is how the signature scheme works, right? It's a requirement.
Yes, this is a requirement of the signature scheme.
Yeah, I just wanted to highlight that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And again, that was the goal, was not to change CL signatures or AnonCreds in any significant way, but actually make it align with it. The issuer could commit to the JSON-LD context. So we don't do anything with the JSON-LD context. The way this works though is, there is the concept, I think, that the issuer could commit, could put something into the signature to say, this is the JSON-LD context that I used when I constructed this. But that is not done. So, this topic of committing to the JSON-LD context comes up a fair amount when not using RDF canonicalization. So in using other SD jots and other things like that don't use that technique. I wonder if this would be a good idea, but I'll leave that as a aside.
Just Stephen, no, just Patrick's on the queue. I wonder if you're on
the queue. Okay. Patrick?
If you can just finish the last bullet point, but I have just a quick thought about this whole context and vocab that I'd be happy to share right after.
Okay. So JSON LD vocab, for those not familiar with it, it's the get out of jail free card for JSON LD. Basically, you can include that, and anything that isn't otherwise in a context is automatically given a default, included as a default, component, if you will. So it eliminates the need for a schema specific context. One of the challenges we had is Anoncreds has a schema. It's not a JSON LD schema. It's a schema object. And we didn't want to eliminate that. And we also didn't really have a good way of saying, oh, by the way, this schema has this context involved, this custom context. What we did was we used that vocab so that it would define a full JSON LD context for the credential, but anything that was not picked up by the existing context would be use the vocab. VCDM has eliminated that, and it's generally frowned upon for data integrity proofs. We fall back on this idea that a JSON LD could be provided in a future version, probably not for Anoncreds V1, but definitely for V2. And I believe it is still possible to add to a VCDM a vocab line if you want. Again, frowned upon by the community, I believe, but possible. And with that, Patrick, jump in.
Yeah, so about the context and the vocab and what you have in your credential, it really comes to how you design the credential you're going to issue. So this sort of approach is like a Anoncreds first approach. So we're used to just publishing a schema and then issuing that credential, and then we want to fit that in a W3C. But if I was to design a credential, because if we look at the citizenship vocab, for example, and other of the examples, most of them is just a flat line of attributes. So I could, if I go the other way around, where I design my context, I use the citizenship vocab, and then I publish my schema based on a type in my context, I achieve just that. Because the schema name can be used as the credential subject type, and that's going to be tied to specific properties that's going to be available. So, you know, I'm just going to post a link to the permanent resident card minimal example. This is very close to, if you look at a credential subject, it's very close to a flat list of properties. And it's just a matter of configuring your context so that these properties map. You know, you can just express this information in a flat list of properties. So I think the sort of shift that needs to happen here is to design the credential first, and then use Anoncred as a crypto suite for that credential.
Yeah.
And not the other way around. You should post your schema, Anoncred schema object, based on your context and the credential you want to issue. So then you get the best of both. Well, you get to add your Anoncred signature, and then you can have another parallel signature that requires RDF canonization without the need to have vocab at all.
Yeah, just to pontificate on the questions on the slide. So should the issuer commit to the JSON LD context? If you're not doing RDF canonicalization, it's probably a good idea, meaning that you not only should commit to the context, but also the hash of the context. But that said, it seems like you're not really using, you know, contexts here. And so you're right. I mean, it's not an easy yes or no, you know, decision there. Happy to discuss that, you know, with you on the mailing list or whatever.
Sure.
My gut says, you know, if you are going to depend on that JSON LD context, then commit to the URL and a hash of the contents of the URL would be the safest thing to do. And then for vocab, you're right. I mean, recently we've had kind of this big blow up discussion around should you use vocab and should you not. I think what we're trying to say is if you use it, be very sure about what you're doing. And mm-hmm. I think what you are showing here is a case where you can safely use it because what you're expecting to come in is a non-creds data integrity, you know, secured thing. And yeah. when that comes in, you are expecting there to be an advocab statement in the context. So if that holds for all the non-creds, you know, data integrity crypto suites, then that's probably, a fine thing to do.
Yeah.
That's it.
Part of what we were doing was trying to not change the API, quite frankly. So where we had issuers, where we had holders and verifiers, we did not want to change the API, and we didn't have a way to specify the extra JSON-LD context associated with the schema. And that's really what it came down to. Ideally, we would have had simply stuck into the schema a context that says, oh, by the way, for this schema, here's the context, so that when we constructed the JSON or the VCDM VC, we had that. Patrick?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, like, to the fact that, with anon creds, maybe it's fine to use vocab, but when you start to want to leverage parallel signatures, when you probably need to put a little bit more care into the design of the credential. So again, depends on the use case and the issuer, how they, you know, how they design what they want to achieve and who do they want to verify their credential. At the end of the day, is what is the most important here? Like, what will be the purpose of that credential and what will be the requirements from your desired audience, if I could say it like that?
We do care about our schemas. One of the things we learned, we originally had an on-cred specific context, and we were given good advice to not do that, because that would require every verifier to have at build time, understand that context. And so as a result, every non-current specific field has gone into the proof value. So for example, the ID of the schema is in the proof value. So it's all sort of combined into that proof value within the data integrity suite. We ran into an interesting thing to do. What to do with a claim that has multiple predicates. So if you have a single predicate age or date of birth, a single claim with multiple predicates on it, what do you do with that? And we just decided in the end not to allow it, so that we could put into the credential, into the presentation, sorry, age is true. And we didn't have to get into the whole question of how to manage that or how to do it. So that's something we're going to have to fix in V2. And then finally, we had to encode the proof type so that even though we really have three different types of proof value in the proof, in the data integrity proof field, depending on whether it was a VC within a VP. So remember that in an on-creds, the VC that gets the verifiable credential that gets put into a presentation is a derived credential. It's not exactly what the issuer provided, but rather one that is derived using zero knowledge proofs into the verifiable presentation. So the VC, the VC in VP, and the VP itself are all different proof values containing different information appropriate for each scenario. So we encoded, basically enumerated with a character at the beginning of the proof value, which type of signature it was. Credential revocation. Oh, sorry, Will.
So I have a question. It's a bit technical. Maybe we can take it offline. But I'm interested about the VC element of this, because my understanding of an on-creds is the issuer signs a credential for me and gives me this object, and then I perform a cryptographic operation which transforms the signature into something that only I know. So which value of the signature is stored in the VC's proof?
So the VC, a holder will receive and store exactly what the issuer gave at presentation time in an on-creds, a VC, what amounts to another verifiable credential, not the same one, is derived and put into the VP.
Okay.
And there could be multiple put into the VP. So cool. Conceptually, you're absolutely right. The holder gets a VP signed by the issuer and then derives what amounts to a new credential, with derived signatures that are proven to be what the issuer signed in the presentation. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
Revocation. So the big difference in an on-creds, the revocation scheme is unlinkability. So the bitstream, what is it? I never remember this. Bitstring, I think it's called. Credential revocation scheme means that you provide a registry identifier and then an index within that for the bit of the particular credential that is being tested for revocation. An on-creds can't do that because that's a linkable identifier. So different requirements. We decided just not to use the credential status entry for non-revocation just because it doesn't make sense to use it. It can be included in parallel signatures applications if there is a bit status used for the NIST signature and a parallel an on-creds revocation status handled. So kind of ugly there and kludgy, but so the credential, proof of non-revocation, which is what is shared by the holder, goes into the proof value directly rather than using the credential status. And credential status will only appear in a credential if it's basically the issuer is maintaining both, two copies of the revocation information in different ways. Issuance date was interesting. Again, issuance date, we always think of it as kind of a linkable identifier. So we're very concerned about it. What we did was we included in the VC, but the holder does not disclose it in the presentation, in an on-creds presentation. And it's included in the VP by the holder as the date and time of the VP generation. It is not signed by the issuer. If it is needed to be signed by the issuer, it would have to go into the non-creds list of attributes. Patrick?
I'm assuming you're referring to the issuance date attribute of the VC data model?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. The VC DM. Yeah.
That's just my opinion, but given how the VC DM 2.0 was reaching recommendation very soon and like this is very much a new thing, right? Like this is not designed to be like backwards compatible. I would say, issuance date is not a thing and
yes.
required in VCDM2. And if it can simplify a lot of this, I would just aim for the data model 2.0. But I don't know. Again, depends who's going to verify this.
So it's no longer required in 2.0. I know the names changed, right? But it's not required.
The names changed. It's not required. It's optional. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong. But as far as I know, both the issuance and expiration date are fully optional.
Fascinating. Okay, thanks.
And it also, something else that could be interesting is the name and description are included by default in the context. So you could just have a name and a description in your, in your schema without requiring advocab or anything like this.
Yeah.
So like this here, credential subject name with VCDM 2.0 would not even require a vocab here because name is a defined property of VCDM 2.0.
Yeah. Again, I've got this stupid and non-creds context. It shouldn't be in this example. But this is an example of parallel signatures or dual signatures, depending on who you're talking to. The idea of crypto agility by adding multiple signatures on a single credential. So because the credential is in BCDM format, you can use an EDDSA crypto suite, maybe a quantum safe one, as well as an on-creds. So that's the idea of using parallel signatures. I know Manu did an excellent presentation on this in the CCG a few months ago. So reference to that. We have done this and it works. So once we have, with an on-creds in the W3CBC standard format, we can attach it. We can generate the signature, and then simply pass the resulting, or the same credential to another library to sign and generate and add another signature to it. So, and then presentation, the holder can use the VC with the on-creds, to generate that if it's permitted to use the privacy preserving, signature or present it using the NIST signature and losing the on-creds capability. So either way, allows that. This is a little bit about how we did it in Aries. I won't spend any time on this, but, basically, tweaks in the Aries issue credential and present proof protocol. So we didn't change the protocols in any way. We just signaled, hey, I want a BCDM version of an on-creds. I don't want the legacy version. We did code with us's. So BCGov has a really good program, and I always like to talk about it on these types of things, the Code with Us program. Basically, putting out formal government procurements, but that are open to anyone in the world that require a contribution to open source. So define an open source deliverable, have a simple application process, and then a pretty short timeline from the announcement of the application to the award. So it's a legal and vetted by all the lawyers in BCGov, or that it's a valid procurement, but very simple. So highly recommended for governments to take a look at what we're doing here. Once an award is made, the company goes off and implements, usually in phases, the deliverables. Once the merges occur, then payment is made, and it's as simple as that. It's a really, really good way to go. So for this, we had 3 Code with Us implementations and an on-creds Rust implementation that fixed, updated the on-creds library to do this. Using the on-creds implementation in ACAPI and using it in Aries framework JavaScript, which I should have updated to Credo, because in the time since I first presented this, it's changed its name to Credo, and in Aries bifold. So those were all done. DSR Corporation did the on-creds Rust. Animo Solutions delivered the functionality in Credo and bifold. And What's Cooking is wrapping up the recently we merged the functionality into ACAPI. So that implementation work is all done. And we're working in BC on deploying the ACAPI issuers, verifiers, and the BC wallet to enable this. We want to obviously transition all of our use, and this is why we do this, is to be flexible and transition into using purely the W3C BCDM for all implementations. And it leaves us open to an on-creds V2 or any privacy-preserving equivalent. What we're really after is transitioning not only to the BCDM, as we've enabled here, but to something a standardized version of unlinkable privacy-preserving credentials. And on-creds 2 exists. I'll just put a quick advertisement out that an on-creds exists. It uses BBS Plus or PS signatures as the underlying scheme. BBS, not BBS Plus. It includes the highlighted ones here are the items that Greg talked about. along with the existing features, selective disclosure, unlinkability, revocation, and link secret for holder binding, but adds new capabilities, new ZKP capabilities, including these ones. Important ones, I see the domain proof that Greg talked about, pseudonymous identifiers that Greg talked about over the last couple of weeks or in his most recent presentation, claim equality, where you can have two attributes in two different credentials, show that they are the same value, but don't share that value. So you could prove that, for instance, a license was a driver's license had your name, first name and last name, and this other credential you have also has your first name and last name, but you don't have to share your name. And so, again, decreasing the amount of data shared. There's still lots of work to be done in OnCreds V2, and with all of the interesting unlinkability work going on, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But right now, we still have to it exists as a proof of concept. It functions, has test cases for it, but it does not use the VCDM yet, which is a must-have before we ever get there. It does remove the constraints, so things like arrays are supported, arbitrary data structures, arbitrary credential types, if you will. And that's it. If you do want to play with an OnCred, we do have a 30-minute lab that allows you to run in your browser, issue, hold, request, prove, and verify an OnCred's VCs using the VC wallet. This presentation is available here and open for use. And with that, I'll stop sharing and...
Cool. Thanks, Stephen. I have a quick question before anyone else. I wonder how you see this work combining or like linking with the stuff that Greg's working on, right? Like with his data integrity suite. Like where are the parallels? Are they going to come together or does it matter if they don't, I guess?
Yeah, we did a bit of a query in the world and there's a whole, there's about at least 6-7 groups working on BBS and different ways of doing it. Greg's work in and others in the VCDI BBS. What we're doing in an OnCreds V2 doc networks has a BBS library that can be used in various ways. Oracle Labs is working on things. So there's a whole bunch of people that are sort of working independently. There's a bunch of work in Japan at universities in doing these. And would love to see it all come together. I don't quite know how to do that. And, so, you know, that would be the dream of getting us, you know, going all in the same direction and working together. And, you know, it's quite possible and very likely that, you know, Greg's work, we're definitely not against anything Greg's doing and others in there are working. Our goal would be to keep some of the opinions of an OnCreds to make it easy to use, and used in many of the same cases, but we're not tied to that. We've made, the reason we do ACAPI is because it allows us flexibility, and we can use it for different things. So we're comfortable in it evolving in different directions and we'll just stay flexible in how we're able to deploy it.
Cool. Thank you. Patrick?
Yeah, just a quick note since we mentioned about interoperability and stuff. Like, I find this very interesting. Like, you know, like four years ago is when I started in the space, and that's before I knew about verifiable credential, the BCGov work or anything. And one of the first thing that we were hearing about was this interoperability. You know, interoperability need to be interoperable. So. You know, with time, I started to understand what that meant. And you know, this is probably one of the most interesting tangible demonstration of interoperability that I saw happen in real time about, you know, specification evolving and sort of converging together. And I just think it's really great to see. So just wanted to share that.
Cool. Thanks, Patrick. Stefan?
Yes, Stephen, thanks for the presentation. So this maybe is a bit of a naive question, but because link secrets are still needed, right? You still have the dependency then to the exchange protocol being Aries or DITCOM, you cannot port this to an OIDE4 kind of exchange environment. Is that correct?
It's funny you say that. I've talked to OIDC people, and they have told me that the three step, the offer, request, and issue could be done with OIDC, but I've never seen it, so I don't know if it could be done. I have my doubts. There is work going on as well for Link Secret, but also for using hardware-based keys, but also still achieving unlinkability. So there are ways to do it, I am told, but I don't know the details. And I don't know enough about OpenID for VCs, so.
Okay, well, great, thanks.
Patrick?
Just wanted to double click on what Patrick said, because I think a common criticism I hear of OnGrids can be that, you know, maybe it's not interoperable and it all just uses the same code base. And I think that's not true anymore. Like, I mean, I don't know if maybe Stephen, you can speak to like the stack, but I know like there's the OnGrids Rust library, right? And that's the cryptography. Yep. And really we want cryptography to be implemented well in one place, not badly in multiple places. But as far as I understand, apart from that, there are many different libraries, all layers of the stack that use different things and are able to interoperate.
There's at least 2 to 3 CL signatures libraries and 3 that I'm aware of versions of OnCreds in different places. They're all kind of evolved from one another, so they're all have a familiar heritage, a common heritage, but it has been implemented multiple times. Cool. But, and that was part of our work, our plan in 2022 in splitting it out and putting the specification in place. So we have a specification out there. It's not, as I say, unlikely to go to any standardization, but it's out there.
Just wanted quickly to add to the Stefan Borg question. So there's the OnCreds RS library, and it's really easy to look at the demos, and you can something that I've done is just to set up a HTTPS, you know, REST API server and complete an exchange of credential and verification. So it's not dependable on DITCOM at all. You know, it just needs to be a, you know, sort of a back and forth exchange with the correct objects that are published. So that's, I think saying it's relying on DITCOM is not necessarily true. There just need to be like some specific interaction, you know, dictated between two parties to complete this.
Cool. Thanks, Patrick. So with that, we are at time. I just want to say, thanks so much, Stephen, and BCGov. Like, I really appreciate your work championing this, you know, keeping the work moving forward. So I think you've done a great job.
Thank you. Thanks for giving me the time today.
Okay. Day or evening. See you later.